Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Mary Carillo, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We're officially into week two at the US Open, and I've managed to get myself behind the Amazon Prime Video desk where Catherine sits. So I know what it's like to be a TV presenter. It's fascinating. And we're right next to the practice courts here. It's about 5 p.m. on Monday. It is steaming hot. And the way Catherine handles it is by holding an air conditioning vent and putting her feet in an ice bucket. So she's got it all worked out after a week of tennis.
All glamour back here, David.
Yeah, it's good out here.
In fact, very interestingly, this is the first time, I think, that I've seen the practice courts completely empty.
Yeah.
Certainly at this time of day, or, you know, during the, you know, the what is it, 5 o'clock, something like that? Yeah, 5:10.
And yet,
it's definitely not been empty at this time before now.
There's still a packed crowd up here.
Well, because, David, in fact, Annabelle and I were just speculating about whether to let this poor lot know, because the night session players, so Sharapova and Federer, what happens is they schedule a practice on these practice courts here, but then if the day session on Arthur Ashe finishes early and they are able to access Arthur Ashe court to practice on, they will move their practice there. But it doesn't seem to have been changed in the schedule, and there's hundreds and hundreds of people expecting Federer to walk out.
Although, I have to say,
he's not going to.
You say that, but there's sort of a lined walkway just outside these practice courts, because that's the way I came in, and I was sort of thinking, am I not allowed to go up
did
here?
Did you sign some autographs on your way in? Because that's what they're... Do you know what, David? In 2004, I was in that line of people with my giant tennis ball.
Yeah, so they're all there.
And I think about it every time I walk through.
Last second. And I sort of waited like one of them, and then somebody said, it's all right, you can come through, you've got a pass on. So I did. And then I realised that Tony Godsick was there, Federer's agent, so maybe he's going to come out here. That'd
Don't
be interesting, wouldn't
he
it?
He is, because he was scheduled for, I think, 5 o'clock, and he's not come out yet.
All right. Don't ruin it
and
for
And I don't
them.
Think he's late, is he? I mean, he's got a watch sponsor, so yes. I don't think he can afford to be late.
Quite a punctual fellow, usually. Yeah. Anyway, this is the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Amazon Prime Video UK, behind whose desk I stand at the moment. And, we've been on all day. We've had lots of matches. There are matches still going on. We'll bring you the results of the night session as well a little later. But, yeah, we've just had the end of the spectacular Naomi Osaka Arena Sabalenka match, which kind of met expectations in as much as it was just violent in its hitting and spectacular and brilliant fun, but it was wayward for one and then brilliant from the other and vice versa. And so it's one set all, then Osaka won it in the third. How much of an eye did you manage to keep on that one?
I was trying to keep as much of an eye as possible because it was the match of the day for me, and it lived up to expectation. As you say, the quality not always consistently high from both at the same time, but for drama and everything else, it had it all. And unfortunately, Sabalenka... The bad news is it was Sabalenka double fault that gave the match away, 6-4 in the third to Osaka. The good news, though, is that there was quite the aggro from Sabalenka afterwards. She was not happy. No, she wasn't directing at anyone other than herself, but there was a big old racket throw and quite the tantrum And there was an Andy Murray-esque sob into the towel in the chair from Naomi Osaka. It was really emotional. Her interview with, I think it was Andrew Krasny on the court, her bottom lip was wobbling the whole time.
Aww.
And it really, it was just lovely, because she put that Instagram post up a couple of months ago, maybe a bit less than that, didn't she, about how tough it's been for her since Indian Wells. She's an unfiltered, sensitive soul, isn't she, really? Who, she's very, very cool, but that doesn't mean she's icy, if you know what I mean. And this is so big for her. She's through to a Grand Slam quarterfinals where she will face either Marketa Vondrousova or Lisia Cherenko for a place in the semis. And let me tell you, those two are currently at 7-6, 4-5 at Vondrousova. So Cherenko's serving for the second set. And they have been dead on their feet for the, well, since about the second game of the match. It's been uncomfortable to watch.
Particularly Cherenko
had the doctor out. She had a blood pressure check. She had a pulse monitor on. Those two are, but I think Vondrousova will be pleased it's going to be decided just so she can have those 10 minutes off court.
Yeah,
because the heat rule is in effect. And how these two are still, you know, moving and hitting tennis balls and sort of conscious is beyond me, because for a while it did look like they were playing in slow motion. And look, we saw Novak Djokovic today, really. I mean, although he was defensive about giving an explanation for it on the court, whether he'll be more drawn in press conference, I don't know, because that hasn't happened yet. But he didn't want to explain exactly what he was suffering from. It looked like he was indicating towards his heart, didn't it, when he had that treatment in the third set.
It often seems the heat seems to affect, well, the breathing of the players. So we saw it the same with Cherenko.
And Kvitova's had that before, hasn't she?
Yeah, it was another one of those matches, like the Fucsovics match in the first round, wasn't it, for Djokovic? Because, you know, Sosa, I mean, it was so similar to what we expected last night in the pod. I mean, it ended 6-3, 6-4, 6-3, so we were close. But then you look at the head-to-head. How could you not predict that? He'd never got closer than a 6-4 set against Djokovic in 11 sets to this date. And at the same time, even though Djokovic was handling him easily, really, in the first set, suddenly that wave of heat just came over him and he looked hot and bothered, red in the face.
Suddenly he looked vacant behind the eyes, didn't he? He'd gone. Yeah. You can just see he just goes. And I'm really sympathetic with him because it happens to me too. And the fact that it... And, you know, he could have ended up in trouble had he dropped that third set. He really could have done. And even if he had then fought through, it would have taken its toll for future matches. And we know that the next future match is likely to be against Roger Federer. So he couldn't afford that. And he just knuckled down and just elevate his level just enough. I mean, it's a nice matchup for him, isn't it? Because Charles Souza is a lovely hitter of the tennis ball. Hits a lovely clean ball. It's smooth. It's lovely. He's got no massive weakness, but he's got no weaponry, or certainly not enough weaponry, to live with these big guys. So he's sort of like a ball machine for Djokovic, and it's just a tough matchup for him.
And he ends up having to extend his range on his ground strokes in order to actually have an impact, because unless Djokovic is off, he's just never going to beat him. And I mean, look, that's, what's that, 14 sets now, and he still hasn't extended him further than 6-4, and that's basically how their respective levels are. Djokovic is a ball machine to some degree, but he's also just got other gears, and he's just everything João Sousa is, but better.
Should we do pronunciation corner, David? It's been a while.
Go on.
Because I say Sousa, Greg says Sousa, you seem to say Sousa, and I heard a rogue Sousa earlier from Mark Ritchie.
Well, I did Sousa until James Skiathalong did Sousa, and then I thought I'll follow the umpire.
But umpires do get it wrong.
Not James. James Skiathalong.
No. Well, I mean, as evidenced this week at the US Open, umpires do get it wrong.
Yes, they do.
Someone emailed me today via my website with a link to the Louis Armstrong Wikipedia page.
Yes,
which clarified only that both pronunciations are accurate.
I've been emailed relentlessly over the last couple of days about Louis Armstrong.
Basically, we can say whatever we like. It's like flammable and inflammable.
Oh, no, now you're really making my head hurt.
It's all fine. Let's definitely call the whole thing off.
Yes. Anyway, what did you make of Djokovic not wanting to be drawn on how he was feeling physically in that on-court interview with Dan Cahill?
I think there's two things going on there. I think number one is respect for Sousa, because in the moment, you know, he didn't play really badly, Sousa. He rarely does. As I say, usually he loses matches because he just doesn't have that extra gear. It's rarely because he's making a spate load of errors. So I think it's out of respect to not go out there and say, I've just beaten this guy handily in three sets, and now I'm going to talk about how much I was suffering physically. You know, that can be a bad look, and he is somebody that's conscious of how things look and sound, and, you know, fair enough, that could have been misconstrued. I think that could have been taken badly. But then I think there's also maybe the fact that this weather is set to continue. You know, if he okay, the match against Federer will be night session, I'm sure, if it happens. But with the humidity, it doesn't get that much cooler at night, first and foremost. And second of all, he'll almost certainly, if he makes it through that, have to play in the day again. So it's kind of like, I can't tell you how much I'm hating this, because, you know, that's going to give ammunition to another future opponent.
And we had the same from Nadal around his knee, didn't we, in that match a couple of rounds ago. These sort of guys, they'd rather just sort of... Yeah, it's quite interesting, because it actually betrays how Djokovic sort of behaves on court, in as much as he can't hide it, he shows you how he's feeling. But yeah, it was interesting that he didn't want to be drawn in.
There is that, Daniela actually drew attention to that on air, the fact that he does that caginess in the interview, but it's like throughout the match, he was, you know, he was laying it all bare for us, wasn't he? So yeah, there is that contrast, and he obviously was... regardless of whether we have verbal confirmation of it, there was something happening, and he struggles in the humidity.
Yes,
big
he
time.
Does. He does.
Some of us do.
Some of us do. Some of us sit with an air conditioning unit that they're plugged into.
I'm quite sure pictures will end up making their way to Instagram somehow,
I
David.
Dare say. I dare say. Dominika Sibulkova's pep talk didn't do too much good, did
it
last night?
It was a rubbish pep talk. She'd have done better off asking what we thought.
Imagine that. What would you have said to her?
Do better? I don't know.
That'd be helpful.
It's hard. I mean, look, she had a bad head-to-head against Madison Keys going in, and I hold my hands up. I said I hadn't been that impressed. I'm impressed now. I'm really, really impressed with the maturity,
aware.
The point construction of Madison Keys, which isn't necessarily always something I've associated her with. I've thought of her as C-ball, hit-ball. But there's definitely more maturity about her.
She played really well today.
She really did play well. And Sibulkova didn't have... I was saying Sibulkova last night, wasn't I?
Oh, well.
Pronunciation corner again.
Yeah, well, that one's gone around the houses for years.
Yes, so. Hasn't it?
But actually, I to be honest, when we spoke last night, I hadn't checked the order of play to the degree... the head-to-head to the degree that it was. 4-0, 8-0 in sets. I didn't really realise that. And you could see that that was
weird,
today.
Isn't it? You'd think she would have challenged her more at some stage. You know, Madison Keys does have off days. Sibulkova never seems to have off days. She might lose, she might get beaten, but she doesn't really have off days. I was surprised to read that too in student Matt's notes this morning.
Yes, although after
graduate Matt.
Yeah, grad
excellent Matt.
Second game of that match, 14 minutes long, and on Dominika Sibulkova's serve, and watching it at the time with Jill Krabas, we were just talking about how much this takes out of you as a server, because even if you hold on to your serve, you know that your opponent has kind of got you, and it takes some coming back from. Even somebody as fit and as energetic and as intense as Sibulkova, she lost that game ultimately, I think, on about her fifth break point. Keys had that break point. She went up 3-love, won the set 6-1. And although she made that second set close, and I think she did really well. And this is the other thing to say. I actually think Sibulkova played well.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, maybe she... But did she play tactically well?
Maybe not. Maybe not, because she did try to out-hit Madison Keys, and you need to be an absolutely brutal ball striker, and you need to be Serena Williams to pull that off, really, don't you? To out-hit Keys
she's
if Keys is
things,
on.
She's many Sibulkova, but she's not Serena Williams.
No. I can't remember who it was now. I think it was maybe Jeff Taranga was calling her Keezy. Early. No, it was Greg. Greg was calling her Keezy.
I've got no explanation for that, David.
There you go. I like that little nickname that Greg's just brought in.
I don't know whether it's a slip of the tongue or whether it's his own personal nickname for her.
Maybe they're mates.
Maybe they're mates, I don't know.
So anyway, we've got Madison Keys up against Maria Sharapova or Carla Suarez Navarro. I'll bring you the result of that later. I'll have a little chat about that. But and then we've got Osaka. I mean, that is okay. We're waiting for the result of this Serenko Vondrousova match here. Set point Serenko, and in fact she has just leveled, I think, once at all as we look. But what an opportunity for Osaka.
Yeah, I mean, I look at that side of the draw. So look, Suarez, Navarro, Sharapova, Keys, Osaka, and one of the, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at Keys or Osaka there. I'm looking at Keys or Osaka. Both of those should be disappointed at this stage now to not come through that half of the draw.
Really? Even if Maria Sharapova's the opponent?
Well, look, I didn't see tons of her match against Ostapenko because we were having beers in the pub. We did have it on. We asked the barman to put the tennis on, so we had an eye on it, but yeah, we weren't watching intently. And I can only assume that she raised her level.
I became two beers law during that pub trip, so obviously I don't know what was going on.
I think as soon as she's really tested, she will fall short. Unless she's got a gear that we're currently unaware of.
Two people have just come onto the practice court next to us who are not Roger Federer, and there are some people up in the galleries here that don't look too happy about it.
They're very definitely not Roger Federer.
No, that's right. So, yeah, that's what's happened today so far in the matches that we've seen. How has the heat been today compared to those first few days?
Impressive.
Yeah.
It's been this back to what it was, I think, Tuesday of last week, felt the hottest. I mean, the temperature bulb might not be reading quite as high as it was that day, I don't know, but the humidity is at least what it was. And I believe the trajectory is upwards from now on for
awesome.
The heat and humidity. So
great.
Looking forward to that.
Excellent. So tomorrow's order of play, I believe, is out.
And there's no great surprises. I think everybody would have been expecting what we're seeing. Is Steven Sevastopol up first? That is the day session women's match giving way to Serena Williams against Carolina Pliskova and the night session women's match. I think most would have expected that. Maybe a tough call between Del Potro versus Isner, which is in the day session, not before 1:30 local time, and Nadal team, which is the second night session match, I guess, in American. But they've been trying to take pressure off John Isner, haven't they? They've deliberately not scheduled him on the Arthur Ashe Stadium.
So
this will be his first visit to it. So maybe playing it during the day takes... Maybe he wanted that. It's quite possible he wanted that.
Del Potro has played two successive night session matches.
True.
Nadal has played two successive
days. And they're all about
day.
Being fair with how they dish out the night sessions here, David.
Oh, yeah. So what do you think... I mean, I tell you what. All of those matches... I feel really up in the air. To my mind, Stevens is a heavy favourite against Sevastova. Del Potro's favourite against Isner. Serena's favourite against Pliskova. And Nadal's favourite against Thiem. However, if somebody told me that all four of those went the other way, I'm not saying I'd bet on that at all, but I wouldn't be like, no way.
I'd be pretty surprised about Sloane Stephens.
They had a cracking match here last year, didn't they?
They did. Stevens is better, though, than she was last year.
Yeah.
Better, really.
She's certainly more confident and there's conviction about her.
Yeah, definitely. I certainly feel more confident about her. Del Potro and Isner, Isner beat him en route to winning the Miami title. I do think it's going to be significant that he's not played on Ash before now. Everybody's talking about how slow Armstrong is, how basically it's the perfect court for John Isner, that's what Greg's been saying in the studio all week, that maybe they even prepared it with John Isner in mind.
Do you know what I think is significant most of all, though, is the fact that Del Potro, not only is he playing incredibly well and the ball's just coming out of the racket, out of the centre, and you can't really attack his backhand anymore because he's hitting it rather than just slicing it. The biggest thing is he's fresh. He's not knackered. You know, I mean, he's...
Only guy in that top half that hasn't dropped a set.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive deal, that. He now looks like the Del Potro of 2009, which is a frightening prospect for everybody else. The other thing about Sloane Stephens, just quickly, I heard an interview last night while I was preparing for that commentary that I did for Prime on Sloane Stephens. I saw an interview that Paul Annacone did on Tennis Channel with Kamal Murray, her coach, who actually said that he felt that Sloane Stephens would not have won the US Open had she not had that 11 months out of the game. And that his reasoning was that what it did, her sitting down the whole time and being in that surgical boot the whole time because of her foot surgery, he said it forced her to ask questions of him. Rather than just going out on the court and hitting tennis balls, she would sit there and say, right, what can we work on? What can we do? And he said it gave me an opportunity to actually teach her things that I would never have time to really get into on the court. You know, just almost philosophically about the game and mentally about the game. And I found that really interesting. You know, I mean, I think we all thought at the time that maybe it would do her good and just sort of slightly bring her back down to earth in her sport and make her value it more. And he certainly was aligned with that. But I just felt that, you know, he is such an interesting guy. I mean, he's built from scratch a 27-court facility in Chicago for the community and for kids. And I mean, if he was speaking to me, I would be inspired. I'm telling you, he's such a convincing talker. Yeah.
Wow. Well, maybe an interview coming your way on Prime Video at some stage.
I tell you,
we're doing a feature on coaches.
He would be a magnificent person to talk to. He's got so much to offer as somebody to talk to and learn from.
Slightly different thing, obviously on a far more micro scale, but I watched her go into the ESPN studio last night after her victory, and she was asked whether the loss she had to Elise Mertens in Cincinnati was actually a blessing in surprise, and she in disguise, maybe it was a surprise as well. But she said, oh my gosh, it absolutely was.
Really?
It means I didn't realise how exhausted I was. And it's helped me feel fresh for this tournament. She said, you know, I had enough tennis after Montreal. And she said, yeah, it enabled me to go home, to go to my best friend's wedding, to just have a few days away from it all before the US Open and regroup.
And that's the biggest thing about
slams. You saw her face
lights
up when she was talking about that. So she's, you know, look at her eight successive losses at the back end of last year. I don't think she's ever going to be a player that can go and do 8 weeks on the road in the far East and just, you know, learn to love the grind of the tour. She might get better at it, but that's never going to be her style.
No, it's not. She doesn't just live for the sport. I think she does love playing it. I mean, so again, some of the reactions last night were really uplifting to how
she loves competing, doesn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she loves the moment.
Which is something that all those top... Now, in this spate of Andy Murrays and Stan Wawrinkas and Serena Williamses that have had time away from the game and come back, they all talk about missing competing, not about missing winning. It is really, really notable how much they talk about missing competition, because that is different from your average human being. You and I don't, you know, we don't have that. Well, I don't know, I've never played Monopoly with you, David, but
I'm really good. Really competitive.
Oh, God. Maybe I've got this wrong. There is a look in David's eye which is scaring me a little bit.
But
do you know
Monopoly.
What I mean?
That's great.
That thing where something just comes over them in any competitive environment, and it's like it's adrenaline coursing through their veins. It's their lifeblood.
Yeah,
us mere mortals aren't like that.
No, that's true. And also, the other thing that Kamau Murray said was that the journey to that US Open title actually started when they began at the start of 2016, because she won three smaller titles, the first ones of her career. And he felt those building blocks over a week-long duration kind of just taught her how to win. And it's, he said she wouldn't have been able to go from zero to a two-week title, and which is what Ostapenko did, of course, last year. But I kind of know what he means, you know.
Can you teach me how to win?
Well, you've already won. You beat me.
Yeah, so, once. I've been living off it for 5 years.
I know. I'm still hoping the rematch is on the way this week with my racket that I've got.
He has actually brought his racket, hopefully,
The look on her face, as if to say, yeah, that's not happening, right? Do you know what's all about? How's I'm working here? Anyway, that's Sloane Stephens against Sevastova.
That look on my face is one that is watching Markéta Vondrousova and Lycia Cyrenko drag themselves around a tennis court in this heat and humidity. I mean, they've had the 10-minute break.
They have.
And it's still looking tough.
Jeff Tarango has caused a bit of consternation out there, because he said on our air coverage that he feels that there shouldn't be any medical timeouts. If you can't carry on, you should just leave the court and retire.
I don't agree.
Why?
Because I think that's a... what's the word I'm looking for? That's a very... I don't know, the logical conclusion of that is a very unkind one. I know it's very arbitrary where we draw the line. You know, the fact that treatment for cramping isn't allowed because it's seen as a loss of fitness, whereas I don't think that's the case, because I think it's a bit like heat exhaustion and heat-related illnesses. I mean, cramp in itself can be a heat-related illness, but I think some people are just more prone to it than others. Look at Pat Rafter. He wasn't.
Yes,
he
true.
Was one of the fittest out there, and he just had a problem with cramping. So I get his point that it would eliminate the issue of the arbitrary line, but I think that is it just makes the world a sort of more unkind, brutal kind of a place, doesn't
it? Also it? Takes I mean, away these... from shot making and rewards just almost brutality, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and would probably foster a cult, more of a tendency towards a culture of doping. It would certainly encourage doping culture if it was purely a physical battle.
One thing Simon Cambers came back on it and said is that it could easily lead to people overtraining and pressure being put on players to train even harder if they've got to be that level. Just an interesting debate anyway. Look, most people don't agree with Jeff. That's fine. Jeff has his opinion. Others can. And I mean, he's not the only one. I know other players who feel, and I think it's irritation at the number of visits from trainers onto the court and the
but
sort of fuzziness of the line.
It's lack of consistency in the rules themselves and the application thereof are not currently good enough. You know, the issue about how long you're going to have to change clothes and how long you can leave the court for a bathroom break, and the fact that you can't really standardise it because you don't know how far away the bathrooms are going to be, and it's different for every court. And I know it's all very difficult, but it surely must be achievable to have more consistency than we have now.
Yeah, I'd have thought so.
It's not good enough what we have now.
Serena Williams against Pliskova, what do you think? I mean, I think Serena is playing way better than she was 2 years ago when she lost to Pliskova.
I think Serena. I think if you told me before the tournament that they'd meet in the fourth round, therefore, you know, Pliskova would have...
Quarters.
But I think now Serena.
Yeah, me too. Nadal team? I think we're going to see the real Nadal. I think we're going to see him jump on team and just rush him. That's what I think we're going to see.
He had another slightly stressful practice today.
Did he? What do you mean?
Yeah. It just didn't look relaxed, didn't it? There was a lot of chat, particularly between him and Francisco Roig.
Interesting.
Not as stressful as a couple of days ago, when it really did look hectic. I think he's got a tiny little doubt at the back of his mind, which might let Dominic Thiem in. I still think Nadal will win, but he might end up expending more.
How many sets?
Than he would want to. Maybe five.
Wow. That's going to be fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Late night tennis tomorrow night. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, well, we'll look forward to that.
Yeah. Enjoy your 3 a.m. finish, David.
I will. I'm on the late shift tonight, so I'll tell you what, I'm going to come back and tell you what happens in the late night matches here. And, it's been a good one. Looking forward to it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Well, it is a few hours later now, and my goodness, what a few hours we have just had, because Roger Federer is out of the US Open. It is, what time is it? It's 2:15 in the morning. I'm sitting in the commentary box looking down on the scene. The roof is on now on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court, which has just been washed. At the moment, John Millman is talking in a press conference, having beaten Roger Federer 3-6, 7-5, 7-6, 7-6. Just an extraordinary few hours of tennis that we've had. Simon Briggs from The Telegraph joins me. Simon, I mean, the story of the match from my perspective, I was in the commentary box throughout. Federer got off to a good start and then just completely lost his way. I mean, his serve disintegrated in that second set. He got 30% of them in that second set. And then in the third set, he served for it at 5-4. He had a set point and he was missing balls galore. I mean, I could barely believe what I was seeing. He could not trust his game in any way. By the end of the match, he was serving and volleying on second serves. He was hitting drop shots every other shot. And, I mean, he looked a shadow of himself. He looked 37 years old tonight, and he hit 77 unforced errors. What was your take?
Well, Federer said that the biggest thing for him had been the heat, which is not something we've heard him say before, I don't think, and certainly it's extraordinary that a night match would have had that effect on him. It was still bizarrely hot. I mean, I'd have to walk back to the hotel. And it is kind of uncanny that, you know, you are still dripping at 2 a.m. as you're walking up the street, because it's so close and so humid. But you still would have thought that he's shown such amazing endurance at this late stage of his career that he could handle it. But he just looked like he was like a kind of wrung out dishcloth, didn't he, by the end? And his shoulders were drooping. He was wearing a sort of that Federer frown you see when things aren't going well. And I think he said also that he was almost quite glad when it ended, and it felt uncomfortable, didn't it? Because to see the great man not being able to access those parts of his game that have been so reliable over the years. I mean, in the fourth set tiebreak, he served back-to-back double faults. That's just kind of unheard of, isn't it, for a man who's not only one of the greatest players in the history of the game, but one of the greatest competitors.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you've just touched on in your answer there two things that I can't remember us ever really seeing or hearing about before. So maybe my mind, my memory fails me a little bit, because we always joke about how he doesn't sweat, don't we? And he looked so hot and bothered out there today. I mean, some people were speculating about his new clothing line as to whether that was causing problems. But as you say, he admitted afterwards how hot he found it out there, how much he was sweating, how uncomfortable he was finding it. And he said that everything just felt off. And that's how it looked. He also suggested that since the roof has been built, even though the roof wasn't on, it has made it a lot more humid out there. So the first thing was the way he was sweating. We're not used to that. And I mean, I know it was a little bit of a throwaway line at the end of that first answer, but the fact that he said, "I was almost glad that it was over" at the end. I mean, I know he said that with a bit of a grin, but it felt, I mean, that's what it looked like. He was just slashing at the ball and just seemed to be really not enjoying the process one bit. I mean, there were so many concerned faces in his support team. The crowd obviously were beside themselves, being upset and anxious and all the rest of it. But that was a Roger Federer that didn't really want to be out there. And that's a very strange feeling to witness, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the way he played was sort of skittish, wasn't it? Because he couldn't settle into a kind of baseline game. He was impressed, I think, by the level of Milman's consistency in the sense there were no cheap errors coming, and also Milman's fleet-footedness, which was outstanding tonight. His movement was amazing. So he felt that he wasn't getting any change, and he didn't back himself really to be able to hit those glorious ground strokes that would have... I mean, there was one scorching backhand up the line, wasn't there? I think it was in the third set tiebreak or just before it. And that stood out because he didn't hit that shot almost at all. He didn't feel he could go for it. So in order to try and get around his malfunctioning ground strokes, he played drop shots, I don't know, 20 or 30 times, most of which came back for winners. He went to the net 81 times, and didn't volley great either, did he? And there were times, I mean, even in the fourth set, he was a breakup, and he gave it back with just the easiest of putaways, which he just had to leap up a little bit and just pat the overhead into the open court, but it hit the net. So he did try and change things around. He was experimenting all the time, looking for solutions, but somehow he was like one of those math tests when the numbers are sort of swirling around in front of your eyes and you can't make them all add up.
Yeah, we're very... I mean, I think I really do want to back up what you've just said about how well John Milman played, how well he handled the occasion. And he was hitting some big stuff out there. He really did take it to Federer. But really, the story is Federer. And I think because of what happened about 5 years ago when he lost to Tommy Robredo at the same stage, actually, here at this tournament, and we all kind of wrote his career obituary to some extent at that stage, and there were so many of us who felt like that, and I think we're all absolutely wary of doing it again in any way. But if you look back on his year now, apart from the Australian Open, which he won, obviously that's great. He lost to Tanasi Kakanakis in Miami in the first round there. Okay, not a big deal. Didn't play the clay. Looked really out of sorts at Wimbledon against Kevin Anderson. It was a similar sort of feeling. He was sort of hanging on and trying to finesse his way to victory, and he couldn't do it. And then we've got this defeat tonight. I mean, he's 37 years old, Simon. He looked 37 years old tonight. I mean, this could be it, couldn't it? We might not see him get back to his best again at this age, do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any reason to panic too much. I mean, he'll take a long break before the Australian Open, and he's won that for the last 2 years, hasn't he?
True.
So that's a pretty good record to have. I mean, he hasn't lost there since, 2016. And Wimbledon, he can play a game style there. I mean, we saw him do it against Kyrgios, didn't we? He totally schooled Kyrgios in the third round, and he was exquisite at times. So, yeah, I mean, it is difficult to know what to expect from him because he's busted our expectations 100 times. He's rewritten the book. You almost just give up trying to predict stuff and sort of put things in context that have happened because doesn't follow the rules. I mean, I still remember talking to you before the 2017 Australian Open and just saying this is a really dangerous time for him. He could slip back down the rankings. He's got no form. He's got no pedigree. Nobody ever wins these tournaments without form or pedigree. Well, nobody does win these tournaments without form or pedigree apart from him. Even Rafa, even Novak, they have to come in with a few tournaments ahead of a slam where they're performing at a decent level before they actually win them, don't they? I mean, nobody's really done what he did there.
No.
I can't think of a counterexample.
No, so. And they've all gone through it recently as well, and none of them have managed to come back in the way that he did after that injury and win the Australian
Open.
That
was insane. It was totally insane.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You've taught me into it, Simon. I'll backtrack. just quickly. I mean, before he played his match, Maria Sharapova lost, and I mean that's now a footnote by comparison. She lost to a brilliant performance from Carla Suarez Navarro, but it hasn't been a great comeback, has it, since the doping ban? I mean, she has not really performed.
Yeah, somebody said that, I think Timani on the Twitter, he said that it's now been as long since she came back as when she was actually off. So it feels like she's been back for a significant length of time, but has not been able to really substantially get back to the kind of championship winning form that she had. And you just wonder how much longer she'll want to go on. I think somebody asked her in the press conference if this was the toughest time in her career, and she replied by saying this isn't tough. When you're a teenager and you've got only a few hundred dollars in your bank account and you don't know where your life's going, that's tough. When you can do whatever you want, you know, it's a completely different ball game. But I think in a way that sounded a little bit hollow. With totally different situations.
John Wertheim from Sports Illustrated said, you know, somebody who respects the game and has got as much pride as she has, how much longer is she going to want to keep doing this if it's really not happening? It's an interesting one, isn't it?
But then, I mean, she might be looking at the Olympics. I mean, that was what her agent, I think, said, didn't when he was Max Eisenberg was being defiant in the early stages of her comeback, and said, oh well, she was going to think about, you know, calling it a day, but now this has happened, she's even more determined and wants to go on to Tokyo. So I wouldn't rule out that. I mean, she's a stubborn character.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And she'll probably take the view that it could all turn around for her. So again, I'm not sure that she's going to be looking to pull the ripcord anytime soon.
No. Well, the tournament's taken a bit of a blow tonight, though, in terms of its pulling power. And you're going to have to search around for a few more stories. But I take it you'll have plenty to fill over the next day or so with all of this stuff to reflect upon.
Absolutely, yeah. So we were going to be previewing Novak Federer as the piece for Wednesday's paper, but I think it'll be more of a looking back now. I mean, the office will certainly say to me, is this the end for Federer? Which, as I've said, is not the question that I like answering anymore.
Well,
I've been wrong on it so many times.
He makes it very hard to write that piece. And, well, long may that continue, because let's hope we do see some wonderful moments from him again. Simon, thank you very much for joining us at 2:30 a.m. What a champ you are. And this has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Amazon Prime Video UK, which will be back on air from 3:30 p.m. to look back on all of these stories, UK time, later today now, of course it is. We're executive producer by Melanie Bowes, SSS, tennisballs.com. Mascot is Charlie the Ferret, and we are sponsored by La Manga Club. Thanks for sticking with us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.